It's always like that. Just before you want to give up, a breakthrough comes.
Yeah.
So just don't give up.
Don't give up. Oh, wow.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Lynn Erasmus is an entrepreneur, author, and keynote speaker who encourages people to step outside their comfort zones. When faced with finding a traditional job or starting a business, Lynn chose the latter and plunged into the unknown. She started a local newspaper, which led her on a path of self-discovery. In her book, Break Those Damn Rules, Lynn says we should begin breaking all the rules that have kept us small. Lynn is passionate about sharing her story and inspiring others to rediscover their power. So I'm here with Lynn Erasmus. Okay, great. Lynn, you have, as we were talking earlier, you have such an incredible background. You've done like all the things, journalist, entrepreneur, business, and lifestyle coach, motivational speaker, and author, I forgot that part, author of Break Those Damn Rules. So tell us what space you are occupying mostly now, the entrepreneur, the author, the journalist, what are you doing?
It's actually quite interesting because I've published a book in December, and then I started a course to be a professional keynote speaker, and I just finished that. So I'm entering new markets. This is uncharted territory for me as a keynote speaker. I used to do a lot of speaking, but it was industry speaking in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm from. At the moment what I'm doing is keynote speaking. That's what I'm focusing on 100%.
Wow, that's, I mean, people who can just get up in front of an audience and start talking. that's very admirable. That's not easy for a lot of people. I actually was talking to a public speaking coach a few months ago, and that's the biggest fear, one of the biggest fears amongst most people, at least here in this country. Really? Yeah, public speaking. Yeah.
Okay. I guess it's not for everyone.
No, it's not for everyone. For sure, it's not for everyone. So tell us a little bit about how you even arrived at this space. Like, your entrepreneurship, was that the first step into this journey of so many different careers?
Yes. You know, if you live in South Africa, you kind of, it's like the Wild West. Anything goes. I think it's a very basic principle. If you don't work, you don't eat. That's it. End of story. Mm-hmm. So I think most South Africans have automatically a very entrepreneurial mindset, because there's only a certain amount of jobs. So what are you going to do if there's not a job for you? And that was actually what happened to me. So I was a bit of a late bloomer. I started studying when I was 27. I studied again. And I finished when I was 30. And here I was with a one-year-old. Mm. And the internship that I did with the newspaper was finished. And they would only take me on as a freelance basis. And I'm like, but that's not enough to pay my bills.
Right.
And they want you exclusive. So you can't go and freelance for two different newspapers. They see it as conflict of interest. So I was like, okay, well, then I'm just going to start my own newspaper.
Oh, wow.
So yes, I did the craziest, craziest thing. And I started my own community newspaper. But, and I think the rest was just history. But what I did, because I knew so little about business, I focused my newspaper was focused on entrepreneurs.
Okay.
So the newspaper was solely for people that want to know more about business, finance, etc. So I was in a great space where I could interview the top of the top. So I could go and get into the minds of those very successful entrepreneurs and business owners and find out, you know, how did you start your business? What made you take it to the next level? When you felt like giving up, what did you do? And that was my that was my motivation.
Right. Yeah.
I shared that in my paper.
Right, right.
Yeah, that was the journey.
So how do you even start a newspaper?
You beg, borrow, and steal money.
Say it again.
You beg, borrow, and steal money.
Oh, you beg, borrow, and steal money. Yeah, I mean that sounds like a huge undertaking. Was it a local, like in your community, or was it?
Yeah, it was a community paper. And it was free, so people didn't pay for it because, I mean, who's going to pay for a newspaper these days?
Right, yeah.
And but I was very lucky that I found Standard Bank. That was one of our biggest financial banks in South Africa, and they loved the concept. So she said, I'm going to fund you for the first 4 months.
Mm.
For the first 4 months, she carried all my costs. And obviously she had advertising in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
But and that already set me up, you know, so my brand was already associated with a top financial institute, which gives you the credibility of she must be good, you know. I didn't understand all these things until, you know, it after a couple of months, it was like, wow, you got Standard Bank. I'm like, yeah. That's huge. I'm like, really? Yeah.
Yeah. So that bank was really sponsoring your paper.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. For the first 4 months, because they focused, they love entrepreneurs, and their market was the entrepreneurs, and especially she loved the they were trying to get into the townships.
Uh-huh.
Do you know townships?
No.
Okay. in South Africa, we've got the, you know, all about the apartheid and all the horrible things that happen.
Yeah.
So the African group was put in townships, which is basically in the middle of nowhere, and they had to build the houses with sink and whatever, sink plates. They built their own houses with sink plates.
They're called sink plates.
Yeah, there's no running water. It's much more advanced now, but there's still a lot of townships that don't have running water, don't have the proper infrastructures. It's not like that everywhere. I don't want to create a misconception. There's some really upmarket, funky, vibrant areas, townships in South Africa where it becomes a tourist hotspot because it's so beautiful and vibrant. And if you ever get the opportunity to go with a tour guide and do it.
Okay.
But so she wanted to get into the townships. She wanted to reach the historically disadvantaged youth. And that's where I started my events. We are focused on these kids. We are taught them all about all the things that I've been learning. I taught them about how to start your business. Where can you go get funding? Where can you get for help? Da, da, da.
Mm.
So, yeah, it all flow, you know?
That's
one thing leads to the other.
Right. So your main audience were these disadvantaged young people who were learning how to become entrepreneurs while you were learning yourself all the good stuff too. Right. Yeah, that's great. That's a wonderful idea.
It's just so fabulous. And I think that's what made me so successful so quickly.
Yeah.
Because I could actually place myself in their shoes.
Yeah.
I was brought up. I started from scratch. I had nothing. I suffered. I struggled. I saw them. I understood their pain and their frustrations.
Yeah.
So when they come to me and say, Lynn, I've been trying to start my business for 5 years now. Nothing is working. Mm-hmm. Then I could say, oh, it's because X, Y, and Z, you know, and I actually cared. Where a lot of people, you know, they start a thing and they just don't care. But I was like so invested. Yeah. I remember it was 2 years into my business. And one of my associates, I had a lot of associates that I did trading with. Uh-huh. So I gave them free spaces and they gave me services.
Uh-huh.
And this guy said to me, I said, Lynn, you do understand that it's okay to make money. Uh-huh. And I'm like, yeah, yes, it is actually. Yeah, yeah. I guess I could make money, hey? Because yeah. I was just seeing it as a social project because I was so passionate about it.
Mm.
And he's like, you know that it's okay that you can start making a profit. Oh, I guess I could, hey?
Yeah. So did you start making money?
No, it was from my third year.
Your third year.
Whoa. Everything just took off like boom, like this. It turned into a six-figure business. It was insane.
After three years.
Yeah, after 3 years. It took a long time. But I guess if you really love it.
Right. And how long did that newspaper stay in circulation?
I eventually closed it towards the end of September, so it was 6 years.
Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah.
It was just I had a digital newspaper, so I had an app where you could download the newspaper. I had an electronic versions. I hosted all these events alongside it, but people were just like, sorry, newspaper is dead. We don't, the print is dead. We don't want to advertise. So I only had my set advertisers that's been with me since the get-go, who's been supporting me, and they would just religiously keep advertising every month. But I struggled to find new advertisers to take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just started to realize that I was enjoying the events side much more. And it was much more lucrative, and it didn't make financial sense to continue with the paper anymore. And oh my soul, it was one of the hardest things ever to have made that decision. It took me about 8 months. So for 8 months, I've been toying with the idea of closing the newspaper, and I was just, this is my baby. This is my blood.
Yeah.
Everything I poured into this baby, and now I must close it. You know, it was really hard.
Like pivoting is really challenging because if you have this idea that you start with, and you're so passionate about that idea, yes. And especially if it's your first, So then, tell me about the events.
So that was, you know, it's just crazy how it all just, you know, just complemented each other. Like, you know, the paper was there. So what I actually did, the first event that I hosted was my launch. So I launched my newspaper almost a year after I started. And I had like all these famous people, well, famous for PE. Okay. You might know, I think you might know one person, Makaya Ntini. He was a world-renowned cricket player.
Oh, what player?
Cricket player, Makaya
Ntini. Oh, cricket. I don't know much about cricket, Lynn. I'm sorry.
Cricket player, batsman in the world.
Okay.
He was there, and I had a stand-up comedian, Barry Hilton, who was there. And so it was all old contacts that I had. And I asked them to come to my launch. And then people were like, oh, okay, started taking me seriously. And then I hosted an incredible race. I called it the Incredible Race.
Okay.
Where I had local celebrities teamed up with each other. And like the Amazing Race. You've seen
Yes, I used to love that show. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Anderson Cooper used to host it. Say it again.
With that, over 3 days traveling through the Eastern Cape, completing all these challenges and tasks and finding the clues and going to the next destination. So here I was, this naive 30-odd-year-old girl who knows absolutely nothing about nothing. I lost over 20 kilograms in that first, I think, 3 months. I was just stick and bone.
How many pounds is that? Because I only know pounds here. And
I don't know.
Oh, that sounds like but it was noticeable.
It's like, like a small person. It was just crazy. But that helped to raise the profile of my newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started getting the awards. People would nominate me, and I would one award after the other. It was just insane. It was just a crazy, crazy period, that first 3 years. And then the entrepreneur workshop. So the entrepreneur workshop just got bigger and bigger and bigger, where it was eventually an expo alongside. So we hosted a full day talks.
Yeah.
Where we talked about different topics on how to start a business.
Uh-huh.
We had an exhibition space for all these people to come and exhibit. And then it became like we entered the Guinness Book of World Records for the largest networking session, and we missed it with like 40 people. I was I was like standing at the room, you're not going anywhere, get back in the room.
Wow.
The Guinness World Book. Obviously, people notice, you know, the events. They're like, oh, I want some of that. I love your target market because, you know, that was a very captive, I had a captive audience.
Mm-hmm.
And in South Africa, that's where a lot of government pays, I wouldn't say pay, but they influence businesses to support a previously disadvantaged youth.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a lot of points in business,
mm-hmm.
where you can get the top tier tenders from government. You can get tax rebates. It was very good. You know, the government was really trying to be more inclusive, to help the small up and coming companies. So I had this beautiful contacts already where I worked, and I was known in the area as like, oh, you must go and speak to Lynn if you want to start a business, if you want to do anything with business, with startup entrepreneurs, go to her. So then people were, oh, I need an event put together, and that's my target market. I want those people to come to my event. And so, you know, see, wow. it just evolved into that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really marketing, right? Those events.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. So that's what actually it started out as.
Mm-hmm.
So the events was my marketing for my paper.
Mm.
So I didn't think of my events as a moneymaker.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of it as to raise my profile as my brand, to build mm-hmm. my brand.
Mm-hmm.
But it eventually became so popular that it switched around. And it became my business, my core business services.
Mm-hmm.
That was the big money spinner.
Mm-hmm.
And the paper was just the soft, like a nice to have in the background.
Right. Yeah. That's really, I like how, going back to pivoting, but you start like one thing, and then other ideas kind of emerge from that one thing that you started. And then one of those other ideas that came from your initial idea will take center stage, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then it evolved into training, because then people wanted me to talk and to teach the entrepreneurs or other businesses about how I did it.
Okay.
And then it evolved into coaching.
Okay.
So then people paid me to coach the entrepreneurs, and then it became a consulting business. And then I was the local business chamber to come and coach our business members. I was just like, okay.
Yeah, but so it sounds like you have to be flexible and just open to possibilities. Yeah.
Yes, and you got to have fun. I think that was my biggest thing. I didn't take it very seriously. You could say it was probably my downfall. I could have been much more successful, etc. But I had fun, and people knew that, and they had fun doing business with me. you know, and the people that learned, they thought, oh, just another boring event, and I would have, oh, we're gonna make it fun today, you know. And then when you're having fun, you know, you're gonna learn more. It's just it's a natural flow,
right? And you're probably gonna have more patience with it if you're having fun, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because seriously, so when you get all that no's, they're like, shh, whatever. It's just another no. My next one's gonna be a yes. Who cares? You know, I wasn't like.
Yeah, right.
A lot of people say go and have goals and you've got to do that. And of course, it's important. It's crucial. Mm-hmm. But it's equally important to have fun in the process. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, what's the point of life if you're doing something you hate?
Right, yes. I know. I think a lot of people are realizing that now. I was actually reading an article in one of our in the LA Times about how a lot of people who, especially in the white collar jobs, like the you know, the higher paying jobs, are like quitting their jobs because number one, they can afford it, but number two, they've realized that after having like being this pandemic, staying home, working from home, just that the almost the, how do you say, like the peace of mind that comes with not having a whole lot of obligations because you can't go anywhere or do anything. Like that lifestyle, they love it. They got a taste of it. And so now they want like a job. They're quitting their job to get a job or start a business where they can continue that, something that they really love doing and can just bring them joy.
Look, I know I'm not saying in the blasé manner, but I do believe COVID was good for society. Mm-hmm. It was good for like a reset button, just like what is really important in life. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a person on this earth who has not been touched by COVID one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really sad that a lot of people had to lose their lives. You know, a lot of people lost their lives.
Yeah.
Because of COVID. So I think we need to just take that in and say, what are we doing in return?
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing in return? They're not here to enjoy life anymore. So do you really want to just be grinding every single day and being miserable and unhappy just to pay the bills, to keep up with the Joneses? Is it really that important?
Mm-hmm.
He could have been in the grave.
Mm-hmm.
He could have been the one that died, mm-hmm. you know? So I'm hoping a lot more people are seeing that, and I think they are, because they're realizing that, wow, look at everything around me. Thank God I wasn't touched. Thank God my family members didn't die during this period, you know? I do believe it's been a good thing for society, for the consciousness of the world.
Right. You know, I think, Lynn, a lot of people like want to like have the desire to start something new, to go into business for themselves. It's just the courage. There's a lot of fear that surrounds taking that first step. And I think the primary fear is like, well, yeah, how am I going to support myself? You know, what do you say to people? Like,
Ebony, I've never been in a situation where, and there's plenty, I can promise you, hand on heart, there's been more times than I can count where I thought things cannot get any worse. Like, I'm literally not going to be able to pay my rent next month. I'm not going to have food on the table.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going to happen with me and my family.
Mm-hmm.
But never ever did it actually happen.
Mm.
It never ever got to that point, because I believe if you've got a positive mindset and you're putting yourself out and you're honestly working hard towards your dreams and your goals, something will come. You know, you are planting your seeds along the road. Every day, you are planting seeds. So whether it's in your conscious mind, whether you say something, you think something, or you do something, but you are planting seeds. And you never know, that seed that you planted 2 years ago might come to fruition tomorrow. And you got to, that's the type of mindset that you need, we all need right now, is to have that resilience. you know, to know that everything is going to change in a blink of an eye. But in my keynote, my favorite, well, there's two favorites that I have, but the one is that I always say, what is the worst that can happen? Honestly, what is the worst that can happen? And I think we make all these horrible assumptions in our minds of like, oh, I could lose my job, or I could never have a client, or I could never do that. Then you know what? If you're one of those people that are risk averse, then start a little business on the side. Start the processes now. Start preparing. Tell yourself that within a year, I'm going to have my business launched. So put your head down, and for the next year, keep your job, keep your paycheck coming in, but start cutting costs.
Right.
You know, at one point, my husband and I, with our boy was 2.5 by then, we had to move back in with the parents. Because we were like, you know what, are we going to continue this lifestyle and live in this place from one place to the other? Or are we going to pack up and go and live with the parents again and save up for a year and a half? That 1 year and a half was the biggest investment ever. It was the biggest sacrifice ever. Because, you know, it's not nice to go and live under, you know, the parents of
you. Yeah.
What they want, even though they're lovely. But, it's, you know, as independent people, we like to have our own space, our own thing. But it was a big sacrifice, but it paid off. Mm-hmm. So you got to start thinking of those little things that you can start cut. I mean, that was a major cut. I mean, that was... a large chunk of our money went into rent. And I think most people's rent is the biggest expense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We cut our medical aid, which is quite horrible. We kept our boys a medical aid, but my husband and I, we went off. And we were just, this is it. We're going to go skin. It's cut. We're going to eat just what we can afford. It's not going to be nice. We stopped drinking. Because drinking is a lot of expenses, because it comes with going out with friends, it goes with the next morning hangover pizzas, and you know, all the
you say hangover pizza? I've never heard of hangover pizza. What is that?
Yes, the best thing ever.
Oh my gosh. So what, the next day, the next morning you eat pizza and it helps your hangover? Really? Wow. I thought, I've heard of coffee, like black coffee or something. I don't know. I don't really get hangovers, but that's so funny. Okay. Hangover pizza.
Whatever's nice, just eat it.
That's funny. Yeah, but I get your point. Like, you have to, and I think, so that really will kind of like sift out the people who are serious from those who are not serious, like the sacrifices that you're willing to make in order to pursue your dream, right? Because to give up to say, okay, rent is costing us a lot, so let's move back in with your parent. That's a big sacrifice. But if your goal is really clear and you're really dedicated to that, then yeah. For sure,
I've got this most amazing, she was one of my biggest inspirations. Her name was Sylvia Tassani. You must check her out. She's got the Rainbow Guest House in Port Elizabeth. Well, it's called Cabrera now. But
what is her name?
Sylvia Tassani. It says Sylvia, mm-hmm. and the surname is Tassani. Thisani. Tassani. She's got the Rainbow Guest House in Port Elizabeth, South Africa. So I met her, I think, in my third year of starting my business, and I interviewed her. She blew me away. She was actually one of my inspirations of doing what I did. So this lady, she was a teacher, and her husband was working for the local tire manufacturers in the city. And her son was about to finish high school and go to university, and her daughter was still in high school. So in South Africa, we pay for our schools. You don't get free schooling. So it's two children she has to keep in school. It's your medical aid. It's your rent. It's all those bills. And he lost his job. So they had a massive retrenchment going on at the tire plant. and he lost his job. So there they were with this beautiful, you know, life that they've built up. They worked hard, you know, they've worked for every cent that they've got, and they've put it into their home. They've got a beautiful 3-bedroom house. Mm. And so they thought, okay, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
So they looked at what they had. They looked at the assets. So they said, okay, we've got a 3-bedroom house. We've got a minivan. And I can cook. So they looked at, okay, the retrenchment package. They thought they can keep building onto their house and build extra rooms and ensuite rooms. And there was a local, a big, huge investment of, it's called Kucha. It's a huge, major investment, a port that brings in about 30 billion rands each year into Port Elizabeth. That was like 10 kilometers away from her house. So,
yeah,
she realized,
yeah,
they're going to need accommodation, they're going to need transport, and they're going to need food.
Mm-hmm.
She can do all three of them.
Mm.
There's just one tiny little problem. Can you guess what the problem is?
Money? I don't know.
Where are they going to sleep?
Oh.
If they rent out their house, where are they going to sleep?
Yeah. Oh, they're going to rent it out. Okay. It isn't like a bed and breakfast where you live there. And, okay.
Where are they going to sleep?
Yeah.
So they started, so they went to the garage, had a look around, and said, okay, this is it, guys. We're moving into the garage.
Wow.
Can you believe it? For an entire year, that family of four slept in the garage while the people, she rented out the house. So when the husband left in the mornings to take the people to work, they would quickly go into the house and freshen up and then go to school and go to work. That's how they lived for a year.
Wow.
But today, she is wildly successful. She's got a B&Bs. She's got like a fleet of vehicles. She's like insane. Mm. Just because 1 year of sacrifice.
Mm. Wow, that's an incredible story.
She is incredible.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I can't even imagine living in the garage of my house for a year while someone else lives in the real part of the house.
Exactly.
Wow.
You understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
We understand. That's the level of mentality of a thorough entrepreneur. This is like, we're going to get this done.
Right. Oh my goodness. I think a lot of people that think about starting their own business, they don't really consider how uncomfortable they might need to be in the beginning. I think they just think, I'm going to start this business and next week I'm going to be making like $1 million.
Oh, no.
But you have to, you really do have to step outside your comfort zone and get uncomfortable. And that's where the growth happens, right? When you're uncomfortable. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it.
So was that the Sylvia, what is it?
Sastani.
Sastani. Okay. Oh my gosh. I'm so slow. Okay. Sylvia Thassani. Was she the most, was that the most powerful interview you've done? Or like what, and all those people you've interviewed, what interview has impacted you the most?
She definitely did. She was one of my biggest, I would host events around her. She changed my life. I've never in my life encountered anyone like her. I mean, she's just next level. Till this day, I've never met anyone like her. She's just amazing. But obviously every single entrepreneur I met was just amazing. I think one of the first ones, it was my second interview. I felt quite flattered. He was a big CEO of Pick and Pay, which is like What's your biggest shopping center in America?
Biggest shopping center? Like a mall, you mean?
Yes, like a food where you buy food.
Oh, I don't know. Probably, oh, that's a good question.
Like food and clothes, like Walmart or...
Yeah, probably Walmart. I mean, Amazon is just so big. I mean, people order from Amazon all the time. But I mean, as far as like walking into, I guess, what is that? I can't think of the name of the market anymore because Amazon bought it. What am I trying to think of? Whatever. It is, but it's been bought by Amazon now. But yeah, but there was.
It's like a Walmart. It's one of the biggest chains in South Africa. It's Amazon. It's Ackerman.
And I had Whole Foods. That's what I was trying. Whole Foods.
Oh, did they buy that? Okay.
Yes, they did. Now it's Amazon Fresh. Can you believe it?
Oh. Yeah, don't laugh.
Jeez, they're taking over everything. But but Walmart is really big out here too. So I think Walmart, I think they're Amazon's biggest competitor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was the owner of all the Pick and Pays in South Africa. And I had the opportunity to interview him. So I was like, you know, like little startup girl. I know absolutely nothing. And I had this little business suit. And then I went and tried to pretend to be all important. And important questions. Yeah. And he was like, chilled and relaxed and answering all these questions. And the biggest thing that he taught me right from the start that I implemented, and he actually wrote a book about it. It's called When the Grasshoppers Jump.
When the grasshoppers jump.
Yeah. And it's all about keeping your ear to the ground.
And
that, I would say, is definitely one of my biggest secrets to success.
Mm.
Is always keeping your ear to the ground, listening to what's happening around you, and doing something about it. So never be too big for the small guy. So he had this principle in what do you call it, principle, whatever, that his door was never closed.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you the food packer, whether you the janitor, whether you the branch manager, he doesn't care. His office is always open. And he will talk to everyone and keep hearing what's the local buzz, what are people murmuring about, what's the problems, what are they happy about, what are they unhappy about. That's where the opportunities lie.
Right. Oh, that's really good advice, right?
That is magic.
Because as an entrepreneur, you're really in the business of helping people solve a problem.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
And if you two up there in your high chair,
right,
good for everyone, then no one's going to talk to you. You're not going to know what's happening down there.
Right. Oh, I love that. Now, When the Grasshoppers Jump, that's a book?
Yeah.
Okay.
When the Grasshopper Jumps, yeah. And it's Raymond Ackerman.
Wow, Lynn, I cannot believe we are already, have time. Jeez.
It's been wonderful. So much fun.
I know. Goodness. And we didn't even really get to talk about. Tell us a little bit about your book before we leave. Break those damn rules.
So the book I published in December 2020. I started writing it last year while I was in the Netherlands. We were there first. And it was just initially was just the way to purge. It's quite an emotional book. It's quite parts of it. It's quite emotional because it's, my personal journey of self-discovery.
It's a memoir.
It's a memoir, yes.
Yeah.
And I've also got a 21-day worksheet in there on how to transform bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
And 40 life lessons learned, and then obviously a section about entrepreneurship. But it all started when that was about 4 years ago. I had a massive breakdown. So I've been suffering from postnatal depression for 3 years that I did not know about. So it was untreated postnatal depression that just escalated into like proper depression. And it was only like once I started getting suicidal thoughts that I was like, okay, hold on. This ain't good. This is not the way I can continue with life. And I then made a decision to stop drinking and smoking, and it was, I call it the awakening, where like just everything, you know, falls away. And it was coming to, you call it coming home. So I had to face all the things that happened to me as a child, and my mum committed suicide when I was 5.
Mm.
And it does a lot to a person, you know.
Yeah, like, for sure.
You always live with this idea or thought in the back of your mind that you're never good enough, you know, that you're not really loving, that not even your own mother could stick around for you. Like, seriously, like, you know, how what a horrible person are you? So it's always those thoughts that that keeps you small. And obviously I was told just to get over it, stop feeling sorry for yourself. I mean, it's how? I'm 5, I'm a child, I don't know how to handle these emotions.
Yeah.
And I did. So I was eventually silenced into submission, and I just stopped talking. I stopped telling people how I feel, and then obviously it represses you and makes you angry, and it lash out, and I was hanging around all the wrong circles and looking for love in all the wrong places.
Mm-hmm.
So that for me was the coming home. I had to, for once, look at what happened and just say, okay, that does not define me as a person anymore. What happened to me as a child is not my fault. It's not my fault what happened to me. It's not her fault either. You know, I had to let go and love her and forgive her and my stepmother. You know, I had to let go of all those anger and resentment and pain and frustrations, and because they all had their own pain and frustrations, you know.
Yeah.
I had to be more compassionate. I learned compassion. Oh, my soul. Mm-hmm. I'm the least compassionate person on this world. And I had to learn to be compassionate towards them. And it was only then that I learned to love myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was through that process that I became unstoppable. Because, you know, that moment where you get to see yourself for who you are, mm-hmm. and you accept yourself, freckles and big bum and oddball and all,
mm-hmm.
you are truly, truly unstoppable, because there's nothing and no one in this entire world that can touch you. Because you love yourself, and other people's opinions don't matter anymore.
Right.
Because you are enough. Right. I was enough.
Right.
So that for me was the big breaking point where I closed the newspaper, and then I started the consulting business, and, you know, I ended up working half the hours. I earned like 3 times what I earned before, because I knew my worth. And that was what I meant with break those rules. It was all those little lies that I've been telling myself that became my rules, and I had to break them.
Mm-hmm.
I just said, that's not true anymore.
Right.
No more. That's not my truth.
That is, oh my gosh. I love that story. Oh my goodness. I think because I can relate, you know, my mother is still with me, thank God, but that the whole, like, the inner voice saying that you're not good enough, and it really starting in childhood, everything always starts in childhood, right? But just believing those thoughts and then carrying that into adulthood, where you're making these decisions based on this premise that you're not worthy and you're not good enough. And yeah, you do go looking for love in the wrong places and doing all kinds of things that, you know, are not serving you, right? And so, yeah, and then when you have this breakthrough, usually it takes a breakdown to have a breakthrough, right? Yeah, and things just suddenly begin to shift.
100%.
Greatly for you, and so it sounds like that is your experience, and that's just. And I want to ask, it sounds like when you had that breakthrough, that really did affect your entrepreneurial. Gosh, I can't even speak. Mm-hmm. Entrepreneurial pathway or opportunities or how? Like, can you talk just a little bit about that?
You know, I also call it, you know, honoring your inner child, because we tend to forget our inner child, and we do all the things that don't make us happy because we are chasing money, we're chasing success, we're chasing approval.
Yeah.
Just because we are too proud or too scared to go and play with that little inner child of us. Mm-hmm. We are too scared to become all childlike and experience happiness, mm-hmm. you know. So it takes us on the wrong road. But when you do, I mean, can you, have you got a child?
No. Have I have a niece and nephew, though.
You've got a niece and a nephew.
Yeah.
You know how much you love them.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that you will not do for them?
No.
So that's what you start doing when you look at yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But once you see that little child, you mm-hmm. see your niece and your nephew, that is you. That is you. Mm-hmm. So how can you not treat yourself well? How can you not say, I deserve more? How can you not say, I want to have that top job, or I want that successful position, or I want to have all the money in the world, or I want to have happiness, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and I deserve it. And you're going to go and get it because you want to make that little child inside of you happy.
Mm-hmm.
You want to keep that child happy inside of you,
mm-hmm.
because there's nothing on this world that you will not do for that child. Mm-hmm. And that is you. That is mm-hmm. you. You need to be that little child. You need to stop saying, I'm going to do this for you and you, you. You need to do it for yourself.
Yeah.
Because with that becomes so much. We've got this in-house joke in my house where at night I say goodnight to my children and I'm like, love you the most. And they're like, no, you love yourself the most. I'm like, damn right I do. Because I do. I love myself.
Yeah.
And it's not arrogance or, you know, big-headed, and it's just, I can't stop loving her, you know. She's been through so much. She's brought me this far.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not going to allow anyone to bring her down. So you walk into that room and you say, I want £50,000 for this project. And you know they can afford it, and you know it's worth that much, and you stop blinking because you know your worth. Mm. And that's the secret, you know, and I always say, look at the way men are always, there's not a man I know on earth that is a proper, serious, grown-up man.
Mm-hmm.
All men are little boys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always okay, you know, they get like a slap on the back. And that's good, that's great. And that's why they're always so successful, because mm-hmm. they honor their inner child. And they get the, you know, the punch on the day.
Yeah,
young lad, you know, going out with those young girls. Oh, look at them. Yeah. Men are generally more happy because they just like they honor their inner child.
Mm.
But us as women, we've been told from a young age, you must grow up. Stop mm. being so childish.
Mm-hmm.
Time for you to pack those toys away. You need to start growing up. You're a teenager now. You're now a grown-up woman.
Mm-hmm.
You're oversensitive. You're too emotional.
Yeah.
You know, society has been repressing us. Right. Our inner child. We've been told that we can't play with our inner child.
So right.
We stop playing make-believe, and we stop doing all those hobbies.
Right.
Most women don't have a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've got to take life so seriously. We've got to look after the children. We've got to look after our parents. We've got to look after the whole family. We've got to still work. We've got to do everything. When's the time for us? When do we get to play with our child?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you have to. The mm-hmm. two of us have to grow together, your inner child and your adult child. And, you know, it's the light and the darkness.
Yeah.
You can't see the light without the darkness and vice versa.
Yeah.
The same concept with the child.
Yeah.
But as women, we need to bring that little inner child out more and have more fun, you know?
That's so true. I mean, I agree with everything you just said, because honoring the inner child, first of all, comforting the inner child, right? Like the 5-year-old that lost her mother, did you find that you had to hug her and embrace her and say it's okay? And we have to really nurture that inner child within us. Yeah,
only your emotions, because we like when we feel pain, we want to run away and we hide it behind drinks or painkillers or sleeping tablets or drugs or sex or gambling or reading books or technology. You know, we hide it in so many different ways because we've got an emptiness inside of us. It's our inner child.
Right.
Our inner child wants to come out. They want to play. They want to have fun. They want to show you how beautiful life is.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep repressing them. I mean, why?
Yeah. I actually had a guest on a few, I interviewed him a few months ago, and what does he call himself? He's like a play expert.
Yeah.
So he goes to these big corporations and he talks to all the employees about the importance of play and how to incorporate that into the workspace, into your lives, because of all the reasons that you just said, right? Because play really does help to get in touch with the inner child that's yearning to get out. When you take that time to play, you just become more creative, you become happier, you're more open to possibilities. It's this avalanche of goodness.
Not to have fun.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Right.
That should be your number one thing in a business rule book. Have fun at work.
Mm.
If you don't have fun at work, sorry, this is not the place for you.
Right.
Because you will see 99% of the places that encourage fun are way more productive than any other business in the area.
Right.
Guaranteed. And you can see it when you walk in the office. Are they a happy bunch or they're not?
Mm-hmm.
And that will reflect on their there's stats at the end of the month, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. Oh, Lynn, this has been fabulous. Oh my goodness. Gosh. I mean, I feel like I can talk to you for like another hour. Can you tell us where we can find you?
I think the easiest is just my website, lynnerasmus.com.
Okay.
My contact details are on there. I think my social media is on there. Everything is on there.
Okay. Do you have any like final words of wisdom or advice for people who are like on the precipice of starting their new business?
Don't give up.
Yeah.
Don't give up.
Okay.
That was actually the pivotal moment where I changed from the newspaper to events. Was where I actually had, because I was just not making money. I could barely afford to pay the printers, never mind looking after myself.
Yeah.
And then I was offered a job, and it was there where I had to switch. Like, am I going to take the easy way out and go back and work for someone? Or am I going to start taking this business seriously and take it to the next level? I needed to pivot it. And that's when I started the event, and it just flew.
Okay.
So, it's always like that. Just before you want to give up, a breakthrough comes.
Yeah.
So just don't give up.
Don't give up. Oh, wow. Thank you, Lynn.
I can only imagine how talented and inspiring Lynn must be as a keynote speaker, because after having just talked to her, you could tell she's engaging, she's passionate about her story, she is very knowledgeable, so to see her live must be quite an experience. Now, if you feel as inspired as I felt after having talked to Lynn, then please read her book, visit her website, and visit her social media. I think my biggest takeaway from this conversation was if you have a goal and you really want to achieve it, you will be willing to be uncomfortable for a minute if that's what it takes to achieve the goal. Just like she had to, they had to sacrifice some of their finances, right? So that they had to move back into, I think, her mother-in-law's house. And she had a child and she had a husband, but they needed to do that in order to save the money that they needed to save. So I feel so blessed having spoken with her. Please check out her website. And also in the meantime, check out zazo.com and sign up for my weekly newsletter, actually bi-weekly newsletter at this point. And you can also follow me on social media. I'm at Twitter at Ebony Haywood, Facebook and Instagram at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for tuning in. I will see you next week when I talk to another fabulous, inspiring person. Okay, bye-bye.